and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. The show is for the week of February 15th, 2023. The carbon dioxide levels, the global carbon dioxide levels today are 421.32 parts per million, well above the 350 parts per million that scientists tell us we need to be at, and there are only 2,512 days left until the year 2030, so the clock keeps ticking. Recently, a listener sent in a question asking if we could talk about how heat pumps make heat, and it seems like that would be an interesting thing to discuss. So that's what we're going to do today, talk about heat pumps. I hope demystify something that can be confusing. There's a lot of technologies and a lot of vocabulary out there. So we'll try and get through some of that. When you talk about a heat pump, it's important to remember that heat pumps don't actually make any heat. They don't make heat any more than a water pump makes water or a gas pump at the gas station makes gasoline. All that a pump does is to transfer something from one place to another. So a water pump transfers water from one place, typically, say, up a hill, right? So you're pumping, you're taking energy, and you're putting it into this pump that's transferring some quantity of something. Right? Heat pumps are similar. Heat pumps should probably be talked about as a heat transfer device. Right? All the heat pump is doing is moving existing heat around, maybe concentrating it, providing it in a convenient format, but it's not making any heat. It's just moving heat from one place to another. So that's an important concept when we talk about heat pumps, and it kind of demystifies the whole thing, is that it's just moving heat from one place to another, and the magic is in that ability to move the heat around. Keep in mind that a heat pump, in that sense, is different from a space heater. We've all seen a glowing red space heater, electric space heater in someone's house, and we've all, I'm sure, since you were a kid, looked into the toaster and saw those glowing red wires of the toaster. Well, that's heating stuff by directly pumping electricity through wires. It's called resistive heating. And in this day and age, it's quite wasteful of the electricity. You can do much better heating things other ways. But yes, that resistive heating is a classic thing that you might think of when you talk about a heat pump, but really doesn't have anything to do. Your toaster doesn't have anything to do with a heat pump, right? Heat pumps are different. So a heat pump, as you may have been guessing, transfers heat from outside of your house to the inside of your house, okay? And that's kind of a counterintuitive thing because the whole reason you want the heater in the first place in the winter is because the outside of your house is cold and you want the inside of the house to be warm, and the inside of the house is generally warmer than the outside air. So how the heck can a heat pump do anything for you? Because it's already colder outside, right? And that's, again, an interesting kind of concept that you have to have if you want to talk about heat pumps, right? Just because your skin perceives the air outside to be cold, right? Just because your sensory perception says that it's cold, that doesn't mean there's not heat in it, all right? To avoid a double negative. In fact, even in cold air, there is heat. There is some energy that can be harvested, okay? And that's the important thing, is that even when it's cold outside, you can harvest that heat in the cold air, the heat that is in the cold air, and move it inside of your house, right? Which is pretty cool. So let's just, one other sort of little notion to have in your head is that heat and temperature. We talk about heat because we all think of, you know, we want to be warm, we want to heated space. But heat and temperature in this context are pretty closely related, right? But the way the physics works is that heat is essentially tied up in the how fast the atoms are flying around in the air, okay? Which, of course, as a human, you're not particularly aware of how fast the atoms are moving. But the speed that the atoms are moving at in the air shows up as the temperature of the air, right? So the heat and the energy of motion in the air of the atoms flying around, those are closely tied together, okay? As the when the air gets cold outside, right, the atoms are moving less quickly, but they're still moving. And that's why you can harvest some of that motion of the atoms, right? This sounds very complex, but it's not. But you get to harvest the heat that's embedded even in fairly cold air. To be true, it gets more difficult, but you can get the heat. So let me just restate that. A heat pump is a device that essentially harvests the available heat in the air outside of your home, even when that air is cold, and concentrates it and brings it into your home to warm the inside of your house. Right? And it turns out that the reason the heat pump is such an attractive feature in a climate context is because it can be very efficient at transferring that heat, right? So, okay, now you're into another buzzword. What's efficiency in this context? Well, think of your gas heater in the basement, right? Many of us are proud to have an ultra-efficient, 95% efficient gas heater. What does that mean? Is that the claim is that 95% of the available energy that can be converted into heat that's in that natural gas, right? There's a certain amount of heat content and there's a certain amount of energy in the gas, and you're converting 95% of that energy that's available in the gas into heat to warm your home, right? So pretty, you know, good use of the natural gas other than the fact that it makes carbon dioxide, but it's 95% efficient. In contrast, a heat pump can be between 200 and 500% efficient. That is to say, it can move into your home five times the amount of heat compared to the energy it took to run the heat pump, right? And so in some sense, you go back to the space heater, right? You could just plug your space heater in and use that electricity to make heat. But I think the claim is that the heat pump would take that same electricity and give you five times more warmth in your home. So it's very efficient, doesn't produce any greenhouse gases, and it's a good climate solution, right? That's why heat pumps are in the news, because they're very efficient for the electricity that you use. And the modern incarnations, of course, given climate change, there's a lot of people focused on making heat pumps better and better and better. And they're getting better to the point where they're a practical solution for many people. So heat pumps are a transfer device that moves heat from the air outside of your home to the air inside of your home. But that still seems pretty magical. So let's talk a little about something you may be more familiar with, which is the heat pump you already have in your home. In fact, it's in your kitchen, and it's called a refrigerator, right? You may not think of the refrigerator as a heat pump, but essentially that's what it is. What is the refrigerator doing? The refrigerator is transferring heat from inside the refrigerator box to the outside into your kitchen, right? And you've seen this since you were a kid, right? That funny looking wiry thing on the back of the refrigerator or the bottom of the refrigerator, you only see it when you clean it up, right? It's usually covered with dust, right? That thing is warmer than the rest of the room. And the warmth in that radiator that called a radiator on the back of the refrigerator is essentially the heat that has been extracted from even the cold air inside the refrigerator, right? You're always pulling heat out of the cold air in the refrigerator. That's why the food stays cold, your milk stays cold. And, you know, you also have heard this, the little machine that's running in the thing. So everybody's refrigerator buzzes and makes noise, sometimes gurgles, right? We'll come back to the word, but that's the compressor. that. So the compressor is basically pumping what's called a refrigerant fluid around inside the refrigerator. But let's think it through a little bit more carefully. What's happening there? In your refrigerator, the walls of the refrigerator are cold, right? And that's because, you probably know, inside the refrigerator walls, there's piping that's carrying cold stuff, right? And the words get kind of mixed. So there's, if you say refrigerant, basically you have the refrigerant fluid is cold. But that, let's just say now that the refrigerant is something that transfers back and forth between a gaseous state and a liquid state. So it goes back and forth, and as it condenses, it becomes liquid, and then it becomes a gas, back and forth. There's what's called a closed loop in your refrigerator. So the pipe that goes back on itself, right? And inside that is the refrigerant. And as it happens, the way the magic works is that when that refrigerant is in the walls of the refrigerator, it's cold, right? And the air, every time you open the refrigerator door, you let some warm air in, that warmer air basically migrates to the walls, that the warmth of that air goes into the refrigerant liquid in the pipes in the walls, and all that stuff drains down, goes into the radiator where it's warmer than the air in the kitchen, and so you get the heat flow out of the refrigerator. Okay, so and what happens is that in the refrigerator, that compressor that you hear grinding away all the time, that is compressing the refrigerant liquid, the refrigerant back into being a liquid, so that it can repeat the cooling cycle over and over again. Right. Well, that's where a little bit of physics comes in useful, and we will keep the physics extremely short and to the point, right? Because it gets quite complex and there's no need to go into the details. But let me just say this, that according to thermodynamics, certain gases in certain conditions, which is what the heat pump is all about setting up, certain gases in the certain conditions, right? If the refrigerant liquid is compressed into a liquid state and then allowed to expand, okay, the gas that's the liquid that's expanding into a gas gets colder, right? And essentially all the piping that gas is in is colder, right? And so, okay, now there's a couple of new words you get compressed liquid, compressed gas, all these things. So it's not that complex, right? If you've ever blown up a balloon, right, or blown up an air mattress, you know that you have to use your lungs to compress air into the balloon or the air mattress in order to get it to be stiff, right? And the compression action is you're driving the gas and raising the pressure, in a sense, of the gas, but inside the air mattress, you're blowing air in, you're putting more and more and more air into that volume, right? You're compressing the air. Same time, you know that there's a nozzle on your air mattress. If you open that up, all the air rushes out, right? That's the expansion of the gas, expansion of the compressed gas, right? So the concepts are quite simple. Complexity is that they're in this closed loop in your refrigerator. You never see it, but that's the idea. You're compressing the refrigerant, and then you're allowing it to expand. And with your mattress, if your air mattress that you've blown up, if the conditions were quite right, that gas coming out would be cooler, and the little nozzle that the gas is going through would get, that the air escaping from the mattress goes through, that would get colder, right? That's the analog to what's happening in your refrigerator, right? So the compression and expansion of gas, think of your birthday balloon flying around the room, right? And as that air escapes, it gets colder. That's the physics that everything relies on, okay? And what the refrigerator is doing is allowing that expansion into a volume of piping, and then they capture that gas and compress it again, and they keep doing it over and over and over again. That's the refrigerator cycle. I'm sure you've heard late at night as you go in to steal one last mouthful of peanut butter, right? So we're talking about a refrigerator, and what the refrigerator is doing is transferring the heat from inside the refrigerator box to the radiator that's in the back of the thing, and the warmer fluid flows through the radiator, and basically because that radiator in back is warmer than the room air, the cooling effect is such that the temperature, the hot radiator warms the air in the kitchen, and that's how you get the transfer, right? You're transferring the heat from the inside of the box to the what's called the reservoir of the air in your kitchen, right? And the air in your kitchen doesn't really get much warmer from having the refrigerator there, and life is good. Your refrigerator works. Isn't that cool? Well, so since you understand your refrigerator so well, imagine you were doing this whole thing in reverse, right? So you have this expanding gas that gets cold when it expands. So if you were clever, you could reverse the flow. You would put that cold gas into the radiator that's on the back of the refrigerator, right? So now instead of being hot, that radiator would be cold. And then as the gas flows back into the refrigerator box, it would heat up. And now all of a sudden the inside of the refrigerator gets warmer because you're now taking heat from the air in the kitchen and carrying it on the refrigerant liquid and exposing the inside of the box to warm the inside of the refrigerator up. Okay. Do you see where I'm going? I mean, that's essentially what the heat pump is doing. It is presenting to the outside air something that's colder than the outside air. And so then that thing that's cold outside is picking up heat from the air. Even if it's 10 degrees outside, the compressor is making it 5 degrees, making the pipes 5 degrees. So the air outside warms that pipe and you're harvesting a little bit of heat. You bring it into the house and you have the heat available. So let's talk a little bit about a heat pump because you have the same terminology, the same kinds of effects. The heat pump is a closed loop system. So you have a refrigerant, which can go from liquid to gas back and forth as it expands and contracts. A refrigerant, you have something that compresses that the refrigerant back into a liquid. The way it works is that the compressor compresses the gas, allows it to expand, right? Compresses the gas, gets it all compressed, and then on command, it opens a valve. That gas spews out of the high pressure volume into basically this kind of pipes that are outside. Those pipes get cold. Okay? They get colder than the outside air. So typically, I'm not sure what the temperature is on the heat pump external, but it should be colder than the outside air. So if the outside air is freezing, 32 degrees, then the heat pump's at 0 degrees, then even that 32 degree air is going to warm up the 0 degree material in the heat pump, picks up that heat, goes back into your house, and then it's processed and that heat is released into your house. So now you've harvested the warmer air from the outside and put it into your house. So then you get to talk about there's a couple different kinds of heat pumps. Terminology that you'll hear. There's something called an air-sourced heat pump. Okay, that means that the source from which you are harvesting the heat is the outside air around your house, right? Much like this thing looks an awful lot like a air conditioner, if you have an air conditioning unit outside your house. But I mean, there's the air-sourced heat pump is essentially harvesting heat from the external ambient air outside of your house. And that works because the heat pump can make the collectors colder than the air outside, even when it's cold out, okay? Now, of course, this past few weeks, there was an article in the Globe about how the recent cold snap was the first really stiff test of compressors. A lot of people have air-source heat pumps in New England. A couple weeks ago, it was really cold. Generally speaking, the heat pumps survived and did well, right? Even at the quite cold temperatures that we had, because the heat pump can make the it's external equipment even colder than the air, so it can still collect heat. There are issues. There were issues around, you know, do the things ice up, you know, if the snow builds up on it, things like that. But by and large, the air-sourced heat pumps performed quite well in the recent cold snap. And we'll put up a link to the article in the Globe. You can read about it. But that's one kind of terminology, an air-sourced heat pump. Another kind of terminology you hear is something called a ground-sourced heat pump. Okay, so in this, instead of using the air, basically the heat pump system is looking to extract heat from the dirt, from the ground outside your house, right? And that's based on the idea that if you dig down 10 or 15 feet into the earth outside of your house, year-round the temperature is pretty constant. That is to say, even on the coldest days, the cold does not penetrate much more than 10 or 20 feet into the dirt. So that means, and that dirt all the time is around 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which is great. That's a great place for your heat pump to collect heat. There's a nice 50 degree temperature reservoir that you can always tap into. So anyway, that's geothermal. So there's air-sourced heat pumps, ground-sourced heat pumps. And just as an aside, you should maintain a distinction in your mind. Sometimes those are called geothermal heat pumps, right? And that's fine. But that sort of geothermal is different from the picture you may have in your head of Iceland, where they have hot water bubbling up out of the ground from the volcanoes and whatnot. So the geothermal hot springs, that's a different kind of process. Here, when we say a ground source heat pump, we're just referring to the constant temperature of the ground, which is like 50 degrees Fahrenheit throughout the year if you go down 10 or 15 feet. Okay, that makes sense? So air source heat pumps, ground source heat pumps. Most of the heat pumps nowadays transfer their heat wherever they get it, either air-sourced or ground-sourced. The heat typically is pumped into the air. So you get warm air in your home as opposed to forced hot water. You get warm air, and that's compatible with a lot of homes, and you can get systems that are, you know, ducted. People may have ducted hot air. There is this thing, another buzzword that you hear a lot, is something called a mini split. So a mini split basically is dedicated to one room, right? And you're able to punch, I think it's like a 4-inch hole in the wall, right? So you can communicate the some cabling. And on the outside of the house is the compressor that makes things cold. It's got the refrigerant. And then through this little hole in the wall comes a flow of the warmed liquid that then goes to a blower that hangs on the wall, and that's where you get your heat from. You get warm heat, warm air. And we'll put up a link that describes mini splits, because that's one of the things you should be aware of, that kind of word vocabulary that's useful. Go back to the ground-sourced heat pumps for a minute. There is a fascinating sidebar kind of conversation. There have been proposals for something called geothermal mini districts, okay, that use heat pumps. So now you imagine a world where every home on a block has a heat pump in it, okay? But that heat pump, the reservoir for that heat pump is not the air. It's not air-sourced, not necessarily ground sourced, but what happens is the utility, instead of putting gas into your house through that pipeline, has gone off and they've dug a well that goes down 600 feet, right, and gets constant temperature water. And that water is then pumped into your house at 50 degrees. And that's the reference, sort of the reservoir, the thing that you put heat into and out of. And the networked geothermal heat pump system is great for, say, urban environments where lots of houses have to have a heat pump, right? And this is a way for the utility to provide a service of control temperature water that becomes the basis for running your heat pump. This is the reservoir that you're putting heat into or taking heat out of. It's really cool, right? It's a way forward. One last thing about heat pumps that's really interesting, really useful, is that you can reverse this whole process. So we've talked about the refrigerant being compressed and expanding, being colder, and then warming up as it is brought back into the house. You can do that the opposite way and essentially turn your heat pump system into an air conditioner. So in the summertime, you can collect, you harvest the heat inside of your house and pump it outside, right? So you get an air conditioning benefit from this. So not you just get a, you not only get a heating system, but an air conditioning system with a heat pump, which is a good thing, especially as the temperatures are going to be warming up over the years. The last thing I would say is there's tons and tons of information online, right? Google heat pump, Google mini split. Everybody wants to sell you something. We will put up links to some nonprofit organizations that try to help you sort through the array of things that you can do. In particular, we'll talk about Green Energy Consumers Alliance. Right? They help you through thinking about heat pumps. The state of Massachusetts, the Clean Energy Mass CEC, does the same thing to try and help people figure out which pumps they'd want to get, what they're available, what's available, what best suits their needs, because everyone's different. Everyone's got a different house. You have to think through this stuff fairly carefully. It's also true that with the advent of the Biden administration Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, there's money, serious money, to help upgrade your home. Right? Typically, that's going to be buying the heat pumps themselves. Probably going to be, may need some electrical upgrades because I think some of these things run at 220, 240 volts. So you may need a higher voltage circuit, things like that. But there's federal and state money available to help you do that in terms of rebates. That's really good. Again, I won't even pretend that we can describe all that. But if you start Googling it, you will find these things, this information online. So there you go. There's heat pumps demystified. I hope this helps. I hope if I confuse you, please send me an email. We'll return to the topic because there's a lot that we can all learn. And I hope this is worthwhile. What we'll do is put up links to what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.org. Go for a newsletter and more, pull that down and find blog and podcast and be hiding in there. The links, so if you want to read about stuff. If you have questions or if I've not explained something clearly, please send me an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let me know what I didn't get right, and we'll talk about it some more. You're probably listening to this on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution apps. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we'll close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investments, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So thanks for listening. Hope this helps. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.